Before each movement in the musical score of the Catalogue of Birds, Messiaen included detailed, descriptive paragraphs about the land he was surrounded by and the birds he observed, almost like an ethnographer jotting down field notes. Episode 1 of this series began with a creative account of one of these introductory paragraphs to the musical work, The Curlew.
This movement in your peripheral. A small, feathery, yellowish-brown body over top a set of thin, gray and brown legs. A tousled head of smooth, dark feathers. A beak that's long and curved like a sickle.
Here's a bit of Messiaen's actual words. Island of Ouessant. At Pern Point, you might see a large bird with striped, rusty yellow and gray-brown plumage, with long legs and having a very long, curved beak in the shape of a sickle, the curlew. His solo goes like this, slow, sad tremolos, a rising chromatic passage, savage trills, and a repeated glissando call that captures all the desolation of seascapes. All the cries of the coastal birds, the cruel call of the black-headed gull, the rhythms of the herring gull, brassy and horn-like in quality, fluted melody of the oyster catcher, the little ringed plover, the common gull, the guillemot. The water extends to the vanishing point. Again a few bird calls, and the wail of the curlew, which is repeated as he flies off. Cold, total darkness, only the sound of the surf. One of the first things my previous guest, Craig Ely, spoke about was the detailed note-taking that he observed throughout Messiaen's 7 volumes of the catalogue. Quote, "These really descriptive, poetic presentations of where we are in the land, in addition to the detailed marking of the score, says to me that this piece had a multi-sensory, multimodal way of being in the world. Some of his descriptions don't involve music at all. They involve these environmental elements of the setting. Something in that speaks to the richness of environmental music." End quote. Since Messiaen's extra musical information seemed important enough to include in the published score, I can only assume it would be important for listeners to be aware of. In another movement of the catalogue, Le Chocard des Alpes, or the Alpine Chuff, the structure of Messiaen's written account strongly corresponds to the structure of his eco-musical composition. And because of this, I'd like to devote this episode to a narrative performance of the Alpine Chuff. First, though, a bit about the Alpine region that Messiaen visited during his birdsong collecting tour. Perhaps the sound of music best captures our popular imagination of the Alps, grassy, open, and lush grazing land. But there's a lesser-traveled alpine space, and one with much greater a vantage point. On a mountain over 10,000 feet tall, both the terrain and the air becomes inhospitable for human inhabitants. This is where you'd find the two-feathered subjects of Le Chocard des Alpes, the title bird, again translated to the Alpine Chuff, and the Grand Corbeau, translated to the Raven. The terrain is steep, extremely rocky, and often icy, as this is the elevation that supports glaciers and snow caps. The inhospitable nature of the place is reflected in its musical portrayal through sharp dissonances and perpetual series of chords. It's an expansive, geometrical yet jagged musical representation. I'll let ornithologist Mark Barris, who was featured in episode 2, give us some context about the actual birds.
The alpine chough, or sometimes called the yellow-billed chough, and there's also a red-billed chough as well. Generally a very jet-black bird, and as their name suggests, one has a yellow bill, the other has a red bill, but they both have really red feet, too.
Are both of them European birds?
They are, and so the alpine chough tends to be a little bit smaller and more restricted into the French Alps. They're high altitude birds. That's one of the amazing things about these creatures is, in fact, they have a number of physiological adaptations to living at high altitudes. In fact, their hemoglobin allows a much greater ability to scavenge oxygen and also to release it. Choughs are routinely seen by actual commercial airline flights flying at elevations 25,000, 30,000 feet, where most, nearly all mammals at that altitude would immediately asphyxiate. Mm-hmm. These birds, as crows, tend to be very socially gregarious birds. They're often found in groups. If you look at their wings, they actually have a very rectangular wings and a very expansive tail. And what those are designed for is for actually slow-moving flight, but they also are small enough such that they can perform extraordinarily complicated aerial maneuvers. And particularly that tail essentially provides them with the ability to just make incredibly tight turns and rotations and inversions that most other species of birds, they may be capable of it, but they don't do it regularly. So these guys are masters of their aerial environment by far.
Yeah, that's what he means by acrobatics then.
Absolutely.
The flipping and turning and stuff in the air.
Yeah, and the characteristic shape of the wings and the tail are really what provide them with that ability.
Hmm.
Definitely a accurate characterization.
But I'm wondering, just in general, if you could talk quickly about the Grand Corbeau, which I said was a raven or a grand crow, mm-hmm. a large crow.
Choughs and ravens, you know, they're very closely related, much more closely related than to other species of birds. And in contrast to the choughs, ravens actually have essentially more or less a uniform distribution over the northern hemisphere, and much more abundant than either species of chough. They are adapted to a variety of environments. They're not necessarily high elevational birds, but in fact, they can occupy niches that are at high altitudes, but nothing approaching the chough. Mm-hmm. But in terms of their flight capabilities and their acrobatics, I would say that they're pretty similar.
Well, it's nice that Messiaen didn't just include the bird song, but also included the bird behavior in some type of way.
Indeed. And I think, you know, again, I'm biased, but this is a fact. Few things I think are more amazing than bird behavior.
I'll begin a performance of the movement that I recorded in early 2017. Throughout, I'll narrate using content from both Messiaen's introductory paragraph and his descriptions within the measures of music. Le Chocard des Alpes, the Alpine Chough, the Alps of Dauphine, Louessant, climbing toward Mount Midge and its three glaciers. the lake at Pivache. Marvelous view of the mountains, gorges, and precipices. An alpine chough, separated from his group, crosses the precipice, crying. The gliding, silent and majestic, of the golden eagle, carried on currents of air. The raucous, fierce grunting of the raven, king of the highest mountain regions. Different cries of the alpine choughs and their acrobatic flight, swoops, dives, and loops above the gorges. In front of the Saint-Christophe-en-Ouezon Mountains, Clapier Saint-Christophe, chaos of crumbling boulders, Dante-esque rock formations, piled in disarray by the giants of the mountain. An alpine chough makes a tour of the countryside, surveying the cliffs. An alpine chough, separated from his group, crosses the precipice, crying. The gliding, silent and majestic, of the golden eagle carried on currents of air. The raucous, fierce grunting of the raven, king of the highest mountain regions. Different cries of the alpine choughs and their acrobatic flights, swoops, dives, and loops above the gorges. Coda, the Écrins Mountains, Cirque de Bonpierre, with its immense rocks, aligned like phantom giants, or like the towers of a supernatural fortress. Birdsong recordings for this episode came from the Macaulay Library at Cornell University. If you'd like links to these recordings and information on who recorded each, please visit my website, kyledjohnson.com. A special thanks to Todd Welburn for his translations of Messiaen's written accounts. The audio recording of my own playing was engineered and produced by Brian Grimm. Thanks for listening.